So that's it for the first season of A Democratic Socialist Almanac. Some odds and ends may float up here and there afterwards. Some updates, some conversations. But further episodes will not add anything essential to what has been said here. The goal was to articulate a certain vision, and that's been done. The thing exists. I'm not sure how much sway it has or how much it has changed people's opinions. People seem to have pretty static opinions these days. The last episode on Joe Biden was downloaded 170 times. The average was about 125. I'm not sure if that's a lot or a little. But, you know, we did what we could, and people who express these kinds of ideas don't really have much of a space open to them in the left press. And maybe it's a little bit of a niche category to have a podcast about liberal Marxism. In my final statements here, I just want to talk about how dangerous the current moment is. I do not mean the banal observation that we are now under great physical and political threat, although we are threatened in those ways. I mean that we are under a great moral danger. Our very humanity is at stake in these moments. I'll come back to the present, but first I want to talk a little bit about people in the past, in another part of the world, whose experiences are not really so remote now. The problems of everyday people living under fascist domination could become our problems soon, and I want to discuss that here. As World War II progressed, the Nazis relied more and more on Jewish labor because German men were dying in disastrous colonial wars in Eastern Europe. This naturally extended to the mass extermination sites. Often, Jews were forced to herd their confreres and co-religionists into gas chambers, as was the case at Belzec, for example. These people followed Nazi orders under threat of death. And if they died in revolt, for sure someone else would have done those tasks. So I don't think their situation was a moral one. They didn't really have a choice. When they got a good chance to attempt escape or revolt, they did so. So we couldn't call them willing participants. They were also victims. They had a range of options that was incredibly narrow, and these options were determined by actions far removed in time and space from them. People who lived under Nazi occupation had a little more agency. They could choose to risk their lives and the lives of their family to rescue Jewish people, although in most places, after the Nazis made a couple of examples, most people didn't. In different situations, different people found ways to be heroic or not. I'm linking to a long talk about it. But there are very few moral heroes in reality. They are praiseworthy, but we can't expect them to present a solution to the problems we have now. They're only really a solution in the movies and in our fantasies. But there were people in this story who could easily have made a different choice. In the spring of 1933, Germany had its last free elections. There are many reasons why they were led to this impasse, and I've treated them somewhat in an episode of this podcast. Ultimately, it boils down to a near universal loss of faith in democracy. And in the context of the socialist tradition, the crisis took the form of a split in the left about democratic values. It's in those final elections in Weimar Germany that the actions of a decade later were determined, narrowed, and captured. Had the left rallied to the Democratic Weimar Republic or simply been able to form a government with the conservatives, those conservatives may not have felt they needed to lift Hitler into power. As I discuss in the episode on Germany, a dozen conservative governments around Europe blocked fascists from taking power, depending on if they could find support on the left for a democratic coalition. The Jewish staff of German death camps could only choose to work or die. But that circumstance was forced on them by the German electorate, who could have done better. The Germans could have avoided the disaster. Ukrainians could not. Trump-supporting Americans will not do any better. We are currently living a moment where we have the ability to avoid disaster. If Trump wins a second term, our choices narrow down considerably. We're not just risking our ability to live, but also risking our ability to avoid our fellow Americans the shame of collaboration, which is much worse. Throughout this podcast, I have shown that no one in power is an angel or a devil. And the same is true of all of us. To say the same thing in different words, before 2016, I don't think that Republicans were ready to separate masses of immigrant children from their parents, or to end Social Security, or to destroy the post office, or to destroy our democratic election system on behalf of a third-rate Russian gangster wannabe. Trump's support base has stayed steady at around 40%. These people are being groomed to become genuine Nazi stormtroopers and brown shirts. They don't seem concerned over the way our retirement homes have become a slaughterhouse of COVID. They don't seem to mind ending Social Security. If you are disappointed in your family and friends not wearing masks, then please consider what crimes they will be capable of in year two or three of a second Trump term. Government officials can be co-opted, fired, turkey farmed, as we saw in the episode about Michael Lewis. We can expect local police departments to cooperate with or be replaced with federal agents. And as the corruption spreads, ultimately, the federal government can be expected to allow gangs of brown shirts to operate with impunity. It's no good organizing a brake-light clinic when federal agents and their white supremacist lackeys are kidnapping our leaders off the street without provocation because they don't need probable cause. As Hannah Arendt rightly pointed out, when Nazis lie, they are providing justifications for what they intend to do. So if it were true that Black Lives Matter were fascistic Bolsheviks, as Bill Barr has testified to Congress, what sort of actions would that justify? Because that's what Trump intends to do. Trump Incorporated have drafted legislation that would deny Antifa American citizenship. And Antifa can be anyone they say it is. Without American citizenship, they can torture us, imprison us indefinitely, take our lives, try us as enemy combatants. We no longer benefit that at that point from the right to assemble or free speech. People who think America is nothing more than one long, continuous exercise of arbitrary power by white supremacists show a staggering failure of imagination. Tulsa, Oklahoma would be read by future generations as a mere prelude to a second Trump term. I'm ending a period where I worked exclusively on this podcast, so that I can work instead to help elect Joe Biden. I'm not under any illusions that Biden represents a solution to all of our problems, but I also don't think it's the case that he is just the lesser evil. Joe Biden's platform, if implemented, would be the most progressive advance in our country since the New Deal. Joe Biden's long career, which I discuss at length in the final episode, is marked by his blunt honesty about his political positions, and a commitment to finding a negotiated solution, and to working together with people even if he disagrees with them. He's a man with a keen understanding of what is politically possible. He has never misrepresented his political beliefs to win or to pander to voters. Many of those beliefs expressed by Joe Biden, we're certain to alienate some progressives. There's something in his platform for everyone to hate. That's why I'm sure that if it's in his platform, he sincerely believes in it and thinks it is possible. Things like capping the amount of money that you spend on rent to 30% of your income. Things like a federal $15 an hour minimum wage. And it fills me with hope. Biden's choice of Kamala Harris as his running mate, a person who signed on to Sanders' Medicare for All plan, confirms what I said there, that Biden intends to pass a strong, redistributive New Deal for racial equality. That's probably why Michael Moore has called Harris the most progressive vice president candidate we have had in our lifetime. Moore gets confused about why Biden would choose Harris, because he doesn't understand Biden. You can listen to my Guide to Biden episode and be a lot smarter than Michael Moore is on this issue in his podcast. But even he is smart enough to know Harris is a progressive, and Biden's choice is a sign that he's tacking to the left, that he is listening with an open heart to his critics in the progressive movement. People didn't notice Biden's new leftward lean because they didn't read his platform, and they're dominated by propaganda, the kind of lying, fascistic propaganda that I talk about in the episodes on Syria and the Ukraine. As of this writing, Joe Biden has a strong lead in the polls. 11 points is what NPR reported this morning. He has to do better than win, though. He has to win in the Electoral College. If the vote count is close in a state with a Republican governor, it's possible they could end counting before all the votes are in. If Biden wins with a slight advantage in the Electoral College, Trump could contest the outcome in court, in a court system he has had an outsized role in shaping. In short, we have a chance, though by no means a certainty, of victory. People say that Biden will just perpetuate the system that got us here. If you mean back to another election where we can have a chance to win, then yes, it's true. Biden will bring us back here. Trump will not. He will end meaningful democracy in a second term. But Biden's not running on the promise of a return to a past condition. In this podcast, I have cited the work of a multitude of sociologists, data scientists, and socialist organizers and democratic organizers from Hajnal, Asharya, McElwee, Bayard Rustin, Stacey Abrams, and more to show that moderate popular progressive legislation like the Voting Rights Act has measurable effects fighting racist attitudes. There is consensus in the scholarly community that nothing else has the same impact. Not political campaigns, not activism, nothing but moderate, progressive legislation. And as I highlighted in the episode on the German Revolution, Lenin himself believed that supporting moderates against the far right was an essential task for revolutionaries, crucially because he identifies this process as the one where the working class learns its needs and abilities. There is no path to power for socialists that does not require shifting public opinion. That's how we change the system. And again, Biden is the strongest hope we've had in our lifetime to achieve those goals. If you spend any amount of time online in left spaces on social media, you'll find a table of doom with a list of political issues on the left-hand side, and one column is Trump and the other one is Biden. And then the rest of the table is supposed to be their respective political positions. These are all false, superficial, half-true, dumb. First off, no one has a political position that can be summed up in one word. Don't be lazy. This is very serious. Read Biden's platform before you give yourself the privilege of an opinion about Joe Biden. If there's some aspect of Biden or his politics that you think I should have addressed but didn't, understand, I covered the points that were important. There's a lot I studied intensely and then left out because it wasn't important. or it was based on misinformation, or it wasn't credible. I would encourage you to do more research than you make conclusions. And understand, the far-left media is compromised, as I worked in this podcast to show, and that the options in front of us, they are progress and fascism. Full luxury space communism is not currently on the menu. If we choose progress, then better options open up to us later. I have exhaustively discussed the socialist tradition, and I think shown that there are resources in that tradition for socialists to find a way out of the trap they're in, from Marx's rejection of revolutionary conspiracies to the democratic movement the Bolsheviks rode to power and then betrayed, to the discussion of how German communists aided Hitler's rise to power by attacking the fledgling Weimar Republic, to Garcia Oliver's appeal to Catalan anarchists to support the Spanish Republic against Franco, to the failure of Indonesian communists under the influence of Maoism to fight for democracy instead of their abortive coup attempt. I have documented exhaustively how socialists fail time and again when they abandon democratic values. And here is where the socialists of today are failing. Bernie Sanders lost the primary because he lost the vote, not because of some shadowy conspiracy. We have to respect the democratic will of the people and continue, as Lenin advised, to patiently explain. As I told my comrades on the steps of City Hall last May Day, we can no longer put forward the idea that socialism means having a socialist in power. We cannot and should not want to force on people projects that they reject in open and free elections. So there are resources in the socialist tradition to affirm democracy and human rights, but it is in no way guaranteed that socialists today will take advantage of them. I can't say if the socialist movement will be able to reform, but so long as they continue to support candidates running on the Democratic ticket, they'll have an incentive to reform, and they will have to appeal to the democratically expressed will of the public. If they can stop labeling anyone in the center left an enemy, then they may even actually be able to grow. If their attitude continues to be dominated by partisanship, they will be handicapped in the struggle, and they will be stuck in the contradiction between the authoritarian and democratic tendencies in the socialist movement. There's always the temptation for socialists to try and force their will on a public that hasn't yet agreed to all of their ideas. The vote abstention movement is an act of violence socialists are committing as punishment for people not choosing Bernie Sanders. It is an expression of authoritarianism. Let's call the Trump presidency what it is: a lynching. The official line of the Democratic Socialists of America is to stand on the sidelines. When Bernie Sanders dropped out of the race, the DSA National Political Committee put out a statement reiterating their commitment to the struggle against poverty and racism while rejecting the most important thing that we need to do now to fight those things, and that is lift Joe Biden into the presidency. This is intentional bystanderism. This is standing on the sideline watching a lynching with your arms folded. The national organization has encouraged its various locals to act busy, doing a lot of other good things that I won't argue are bad things, but that won't matter if Trump gets a second term. I'm glad if you endorse a winning progressive in a local election, but that's not going to matter if Trump can claim our nation as his private property. You can't mutual aid or grassroots organize against a fascist who has consolidated ultimate executive power and tamed the judiciary. Some of you will say, don't vote shame me. Well, how very American to reject an attempt to hold people responsible for something they're doing. Look, I get it. You shouldn't fat shame people because that's maybe not something they can change right away, and they still are valuable as people. You shouldn't kink shame people, so long as everything is happening between consenting adults. We're just having fun. That's great. But if someone murders someone in cold blood, it makes no sense to say, don't murder shame me. Or to put it for you socialists, a capitalist robs you of part of your surplus value. It makes no sense for him to say, don't thievery shame me. Especially when we're talking about a harm you intend to do to someone else, but haven't yet. Trying to dissuade you from that is a good thing. And maybe you can't be shamed into voting for Joe Biden. That's a good point. Maybe you don't have any shame. If you are in a swing state and you are voting for Trump or for a third party, you are causing harm. And you should be ashamed. Some will say, but I don't live in a swing state. Don't stand on the side during a lynching and pretend there's nothing you can do. And if you do, don't try and fool people into believing you're the champion of the downtrodden. Stand up and stop this lynching. Donate to the Biden campaign. Phone bank with the Biden campaign. Text ORGANIZE to 43367 to get started. Here's that number. Read his damn platform. Understand he doesn't endorse policy he doesn't believe in and doesn't think is possible. Understand that the left press is dominated by misinformation and stop spreading it online. Step up and stop the lynching. Given the continued domination of the U.S. left's media and thought by the dirtbag left, by Jacobin, by Glenn Greenwald and Max Blumenthal, the useful idiots at Rolling Stone, Ryan Grimm, Katie Halper, Matt Taibbi, Nathan Robinson, and so many others, there is no interest for me in helping to build any of the socialist parties as they exist. When these people put forward the argument that a Joe Biden presidency just perpetuates the system that made Trump possible, they're claiming that liberal democracy always leads to fascism. But they're mistaken. Liberal democracy leads wherever we want it to go because that's what democracy means. And in each election, we can always choose to give up on democracy or to make progress. Once we've lost our democracy, our options narrow down tremendously. I've made the argument that every time socialists give up on democracy, they lose. That's the path that certain socialists want for us. They want us to give up on democracy, let Trump win, because they think Biden is no better. Or they want to pretend to you that they think that. They think maybe, it's often put forward, as the German communists did in the early 30s, that the pendulum will swing back and give us socialism. But serious study of fascist movements in Germany, in Italy, in Russia, in modern Turkey, tell us that there is no pendulum swing. There is no rock bottom to fascism. Fascism ends when we stand up to it and support democracy, or once it has left the world in utter devastation. You cannot fight fascism by capitulating to fascism. I stopped organizing for the DSA when I realized I was building an institution that would actively try and suppress the vote for Joe Biden, whom I expected would win the primary as far back as January of 2020. It was clear from the results of the 2018 midterm that the public wanted to elect moderate Democrats. And I lifted up these concerns. I could not find a hearing. By focusing their criticisms on Biden, and these criticisms are largely unfair, easily debunked with a little effort, the Democratic Socialists of America and the far left more generally is objectively helping Donald Trump achieve a second term. I cannot be a part to that. I will not stand to be gaslit anymore. Being on the left means constantly being told that the concerns you have don't exist, that they're not real, being told that Syrian protesters are crisis actors paid by the CIA, or that Russian propaganda didn't suppress the vote for Clinton in 2016, that there were no Bernie bros posting snake emojis and calling Elizabeth Warren a backstabber, or calling the senator from California nothing more than a cop instead of a progressive prosecutor and champion for equality, which is what Kamala Harris is. There have been far too many lies, half-truths, and assumptions made, far too much conspiracy thinking on the far left, far too much accepted as true because it feels that way and the group all agrees, and a complete rejection of open debate. Real cancel culture looks like a big group in a room and no one disagrees. And I'm proving it as I speak, because after this, for sure, I'll be canceled. There are people right now that are writing me off, turning off this broadcast. They don't want to listen. I'm not worried because the people canceling me are vastly outnumbered. One final word to socialists who think Biden is the devil. You can deny the truth. You can ignore it. But each time you do, you incur a debt to reality. And reality always collects. With this podcast done, I will now spend my energies actively supporting the Biden campaign. I expect to find a great many friends awaiting me in the Democratic Party. And if the socialists ever get their house in order, they may find us ready to build with them. My name is Leland R. Masters, and that's a Democratic Socialist Almanac.